Hey, Rent to Retires, it's Adam Schrader here with another episode, joined as usual by Zach LeMaster, the founder and CEO of Rent to Retirement. And we are pleased today to be joined by Ben Julius. He is the founder and CEO of Lionheart Development. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So as always, our listeners know where we want to start, and we want to start at the beginning, and that's how you got into real estate. So tell us a little bit about what piqued your interest and then what your very first deal was.
So I'm a college basketball coach by trade, and a college professor. So I was doing that for about 10 to 15 years, bouncing around program to program, following the checks. I was down in the U.S. for a while. I'm back in Canada now. But when I came back to Canada, I realized quickly that they don't pay coaches very much up here. So, we kind of had to look at some different opportunities, just some different things. And 2015, I left the coaching world, came back to Ontario. My parents thankfully took me in because I had nothing to my name at that point, and if it wasn't for them, I would have been homeless. 2016, I met my wife, and she pushed me into real estate. As I've always talked about the value of real estate, because my father was an athletic director and a basketball coach. I was a basketball coach at institutions, so I knew how much my players were paying for rent. I knew how much I was paying for rent when I went to school, and I knew that if you really want to have a competitive edge in Canada, if you owned the house that and had all your players living in a house and different things, you would have a competitive advantage. So I was always intrigued by real estate, and we were driving around, and I just froze. Good. Sorry. I was driving around with my wife, and we heard on the radio, come learn the power of real estate, learn the power of leverage. And, I was doing a sales job at the time, and I just wasn't happy really with anything. So we went there, and I actually tried to leave because I thought it was like a network marketing MLM scam, but it wasn't. And she's like, no, we're staying. We're here. We've come. So we stayed, and then I did a 3-day course and joined a group and really learned the power of leverage. And that happened in September of 2017. And then in November of 2017, I used other people's money, and we got our first duplex at that point. So then began the process of the power of leverage and learning the use of other people's money. And organically, it really revolved around all the way up to massive developments right now. So that's kind of the short Cole's Notes version of it. So,
So let's dive in there a little bit. This wasn't something I'd planned to go down, but you said it sparked your interest, and so I'm sure it's going to spark a lot of people's. What did you learn in those 3 days about the power of leverage that drove you forward so much?
So, I didn't realize that you can use other people's money to buy assets. And I think that in the, in the rent to retirement world, it's a huge, huge thing, because you have two different people, and you really, literally, it's a marriage between somebody who has funds and somebody who doesn't have funds, and you mirror them together for the better of each other. And you literally can put money into the pocket for the people who have the funds, and you can build your wealth through owning assets that you may not have been able to get at that point. So I learned the power of that whole transaction and how it can be mutually beneficial for multiple parties in the deal. And you can really help people further their portfolio and their monthly income and their ability to retire and walk away from a job that they may not like and just invest in real estate. And I was that guy that with open arms would be like, yeah, we'll take it. We have projects, we have deals, we have opportunities. So that's kind of how we really started to really grow our portfolio.
Ben, I'm sure your wife has let you forget that you're the one who wanted to walk away, right?
Not any day ever. No. She's been great. Without her, none of this would be possible, because her support through all this. And we were fortunate that she had the stable job. She works in healthcare, so she had a stable job with a pension and everything and benefits. So I was able to kind of take those risks. So Kudos to her for allowing me to do that.
We certainly will give credit due or provide credit where credit is due and not forget to thank her on that. Ben, I want to talk about your development stuff that you're doing, but before we get into that, I want to talk about OPM and leverage, because I think this is a huge thing that maybe we touch on. And OPM is other people's money, but are also just like, it doesn't have to be other people's money, just like leverage in general. Mm-hmm. And of course, the stuff that you're talking about, you're in Canada now, this applies to anywhere, right? U.S., yep. Canada, cross-border doesn't matter. But I think this is one of these things where like wealth is built in real estate. You talked about borrowing money from other people's money to buy assets, right? To make investments that you reap 100% of the benefit from. And I'm going to take it a step further to say, like, you can buy assets using other people's money. And again, that could be banks. It could be private lenders. You know, you could be raising capital from friends, family, colleagues, whatever. And then you buy an asset where you get 100% of the control and ownership and benefits from that, you know, income, tax, appreciation, all those things. And then in addition to that, you can have someone pay that loan off for you, right? I.e. your tenants.
That's right.
So it's just this beautiful recipe of like, I don't think a lot of people really capture how important that is, because the most limiting factor for everyone, and we say this all the time though, is capital, right? Capital, we all run out of our own down payments, our own ability to qualify for financing as we grow our portfolio. And so literally the sky is a limit when you open up and learn how to partner with people, bring in other additional sources of capital and things like this. Like, real estate is a scalability game. Everyone has different goals, but if you want to build large amounts of net worth and things like this, like, it will be equivalent to how large you can grow your portfolio. And it's fine if you only want to own a handful of houses and use all your own money. Like, that's completely acceptable.
Yeah.
But if you want to create an empire and you want generational wealth, likely at some point you're going to have to go out and raise other capital. So I want to hear like your opinion on that. And also just like share a little bit more specifically about, you know, because that was your entry point, is other people's money, raising capital, like was that bank money? Was it friends' money? How did you approach them about it early on? Can you share more about that?
Yeah. I talked about my first deal a lot because it was done on a napkin in a bar. I know it's so cliche, but it was at a conference for this group that we were a part of. And I think it's important that people understand the art of pitching without pitching. And I think it's a loss as we kind of gear towards social media. People are putting their lives out for everybody to see. The ability to have a conversation and build trust is gone. So one of the things that I really pride myself on is building relationships with people. So this the way I got my first deal was we were just talking. And we were, you know, we got to the conference a day early and there was a bunch of us having dinner and we were chatting, and this particular person, we had common interests. Her son was a hockey coach, so I was a basketball coach. So we talked. Her son was actually there. But at the end of the night, she actually asked me, she was like, "Here, you're looking for money." And I was like, "I am." She was, "Well, why didn't you ask me?" And I was like, "Well, it wasn't appropriate at that time." She was, "Okay, well, I'll give you whatever you need because of that answer that you just said." So I'm like, "Okay, do I ask for more than I really want or more than I need? Or like, or what do I do here?" But no, so we we basically wrote the terms up, and then the next day we did all the proper paperwork. But it was really cool, and that was my first experience in raising capital that wasn't my own. And it really allowed me to build my foundation. And I tell people this all the time, is that you go to these meetups, you go to these networking events, you go to these things, and you find out that one person has money, and all you see is like sharks kind of waiting to talk to them and waiting to swim and go like this, right? So I approach it differently. I just build a relationship. I don't ask for money. I don't ask people for anything. I try to build that trust. And you know, now with the developments, we're looking for, obviously, you know, seven-figure checks opposed to five-figure checks, right? Which I was looking for at the beginning. So it's a different ball game. You're in different rooms. You're doing different things. But I encourage people to just say hi. And there's, you know, one question that I ask people that really is a it's a great way to start the process and a relationship build and to ask for money without asking for it. Is I ask people, well, like, Zach, Adam, I know what you guys are doing. It's fantastic. How can I help you? And you got to answer that, right? So now I have a basis of how I'm going to approach you and when I'm going to approach you. And I do all those things. So, you know, with saying that, that's allowed me to organically move into the bigger spaces of development. So everything I've done, I've taken from my first deal, and it just kind of compounded on that. So, yeah.
Well, that's great that, and you share a lot of nuggets of knowledge for, so thank you for that. I mean, that one question could be extremely valuable. I think back about some of the one liners or one questions, just like that opens a door to the direction of the conversation, which you need to take it and isn't like, you know, shoving it down their throat that you're desperate for money. But it is more difficult when you're earlier on, you don't have this track record. Now you do, right? And you can approach people and say, hey, here's proof of concept. Here's numbers, logistics. You know, this is our business, and you're established. In the beginning, it's harder for that. I always recommend people talk about what they're doing, right? Share your successes. Again, yeah, don't talk about money at all. I truly feel like the money finds you.
That's right.
If people just like see that you're successful and you're excited and confident about what you're doing. So that's why you got to talk about investing in real estate, right?
That's right.
But the two questions I want to pick your brain on before we move on from like raising money is, people have a lot of questions, I think, for us when we talk about partnerships, because that's always a way we encourage people to like scale and expand their portfolio. This could be partnering with people. This could be raising capital from people. Like, there is no set standard or blueprint for partnerships. It's whatever terms you come up with. So that's one question is like, people are always like, how do I structure a partnership? You know, and how do I show them that I'm, you know, how do I show them that I'm successful? Or how do I, like, if I'm trying to raise money for my first or second deal, what advice would you tell to that person? And you kind of answered this a little bit, but anything else on that? And then also like, yeah, how do you structure partnerships? I'm curious to hear about how you structured that first one, by the way, but I'll turn to you.
So I could, the structure of the first deal was, she was a straight private lender, hard money, with her basically what is equivalent to a 401k type of scenario or a Roth IRA. So basically she went through a trust fund and invested in we leveraged it on our personal property, on our primary property, to go buy a duplex and convert part of our primary into an Airbnb as well. So that's how that was structured. So she was getting straight hard money interest return on it.
Did you say you secured your primary on that? Okay. Yeah. So she had a secure investment, right?
She was a secure investment with our primary. And that started off our whole investment. And we're about $85,000 at that time, which allowed us to have a down payment, 20% down payment for a new property, and, you know, do some rentals on that new property and do some rentals on our primary that would allow us to rent out part of our primary and start, you know, and all of a sudden we go from one door to three doors pretty quickly. How do you build credibility in the eyes of a potential investor? That's a really difficult question, because I'm seeing it right now in the developments. We haven't built one out from start to finish, but I don't pour the concrete. So I encourage people to make sure that you have a strong team. So if you are doing value add and you're raising money for value add, you know, say, listen, I've hired X, Y, and Z doors, right? Or X, Y, and Z contracting. They've done over 1,000 doors in the last 20 years or whatever. Like, leverage their, we go back to leverage, right? Like, leverage their experience and that you have created a strategic partnership with them in order to do so. Because at the end of the day, a lot of real estate investors, they're not the ones swinging the hammer, right? Like, I started out swinging the hammer because I just genuinely loved that part of the job and to learn so that I can speak to that with contractors. But, you know, leverage the other team. Like, on our developments, our construction management team has produced over 100 mid-rise buildings in the Toronto, Greater Toronto Area in the last 30 years, right? So our architecture firm has won multiple awards last year and 20 over the last 5 years. Like, they're prestigious companies. So that's who we really lean on when we do the experience side of things. So I would encourage people to say that have your team in place, because the questions that you're going to get, you need to be able to answer them fully and have, I love, you know, you got to have a devil's advocate in your corner, picking apart your pitch at all times. So if you're trying to raise money to buy a triplex or a fourplex or a 12plex or a 100-unit building, you got to have, your pitch has got to be on point. And in order for your pitch to be on point, you have to be asked tough questions and be able to answer tough questions. So nothing's going to speak to your experience like answering the questions that the people ask you. So you got to know everything through and through.
Yeah, I think having that confidence, right? And it's not that you're bullshitting people and lying to them. You are giving them, and if you don't know, so like that's okay. I understand early on, you're not going to have all the answers. You could do all the best things you can, right? But if this is your first time trying to raise capital, the best recommendation I can give anyone listening is to just be confident, be excited, be genuine. When you don't know answers to something, like say, hey, I'm going to go figure it out. But it was good to at least have, like, you at least have to have some sort of baseline knowledge, right? Like, if you're trying to raise capital for your very first real estate deal ever, that could be an uphill battle. But man, once you got that one done and you could show someone the math, I always let the math do the talking for me.
That's right.
It's like, look, this is a successful deal.
That's right.
It gives you that whole new credibility. So also maybe like find a way to get your first one done, right? There's a lot of different ways, but partnerships, usually people talk about partnerships when it comes into their, like later on, they at least have some sort of baseline, but that's a huge thing to look at. What else did I want to mention? Adam, I know I'm jumping in here. You got some questions too. Let me think about it.
So I always want to, whenever we talk about other people's money, I go back to the chicken and egg scenario. And that is, you know, deal first, money first, which comes first. So which, what do you tell people as they're starting out between the, do you do pitching for money first or do you find deal first?
The deal first. We have arguments over the dinner table with my group of friends about this all the time, right? And I say deal. I'm quick to say deal first because at the end of the day, when you get somebody excited about something, they want to see their cash deployed right away, right? And if you don't have a deal, like why would I give you money if you don't have a deal? So you may not have closed on the deal, but you may know what deal you're raising for, right? You may be in due diligence in that deal. You know, you may be at like, but if you don't have a deal in mind, unless you have an open-ended fund or a closed fund that you're raising for, that's a multifamily fund or whatever, then that's a different story. But if you're doing deal to deal, you got to have that deal ready to go in order for you to raise the funds. And that's my philosophy. I wouldn't go up to you, Adam or Zach, and say, hey guys, can I have, you know, $300,000 or $400,000?
Thanks for the definitive answer on that, because, and not giving us the it depends answer. I agree 100%. Have the deal, right? Because in, you know, there's different strategies. So you don't always need to buy a value at deal, right? Like there's a lot of people out there with money. We have a lot of turnkey investors that bring in partners and they have the, like we have the deals. They're readily accessible, but that doesn't, just because it's readily accessible. I mean, a lot of people don't want to think about real estate. They maybe don't want to do anything with real estate. Maybe they just want to understand that their money is, invested in like a tangible asset. They like the idea. They trust real estate as a physical asset. You can show them all those benefits. A lot of this is education.
That's right.
That's another thing. Like if someone, there's a lot of people with money just sitting in the bank, and right now they're at least, they should be earning something, but in normal, most times they're not, like, you don't earn squat sitting in the bank. So if you just educate people on how they can safely earn a higher return, like the money will find you.
I just got off a call right before we jumped on here about that. A girl had her money going backwards in the bank. So I gave her an opportunity to put it into one of our developments and make a very good return. So she was like, yes, let's rock and roll.
I haven't said this publicly on any of our podcasts yet, just because I'm not too public about it. But, you know, I've raised millions and millions of dollars from a lot of our investors. Now, we're fortunate that we run this business with this public appearance where people like are in our network. It wasn't always that way. When we structure deals, because there's two ways, I want to give some people like some tangible walkaways here. If you're looking at partnerships with people, there's really two directions you can go, and you can decide, is this person going to be a partner with you in the deal, or are they just going to be a money lender? right? And if they're going to be a money lender, you know, the things that they're going to want to know is how much am I going to earn on my money? How is my money secured? And when am I going to have access to? When am I going to get it back? You need to answer all three of those questions without a doubt to those people. And if they're going to be a partner on the deal, and you still need to show them like what their money is going to be invested in and make them feel confident about the numbers. But if they're going to invest in the deal with you, you really need to know the deal inside and out and understand like, okay, we're going to be partner and it could be 50-50. It doesn't have to be. I tell the story all the time about my brother-in-law who buys a bunch of our turnkey deals with zero money down because he finds the people and they do the lending and create the money. But when I raise capital from people just like you, Ben, we offer them, I mean, and we usually do like a cutoff of $500,000 just because logistics, we'll take and we'll put them in second position so they're secured against an asset that has equity.
Yeah.
Like it's not over secure. It's, I mean, there's enough equity to cover the first and the second position and
if
more.
If you need to sell, you get people money back.
That's exactly. And we give them, we pay them on a monthly basis. It's not even a preferred return. It's just a straight interest only.
Yep.
Like it's a very simple structure, but we offer them security. They have a 90-day call period. So they can call, there's no due or weekend within 90 days. They get their money back. It's very liquid.
Yep.
A lot of times when you invest in, that's a big thing to know because a lot of times when people are investing money, like you should be paying them more if it's less liquid. Right.
Yes.
If their money is not, if they're not going to see it for 3 to 5 years, you would expect to earn less on it. Or I'm sorry, earn more because the money is tied up. If it's liquid, you can pay them less and justify that because of its accessibility. So, I mean, those are some things that I found to be beneficial in the lending space. But do we have time to talk about development? I mean, give us, we did a little bit. Adam, what questions do we have on some of the stuff that Ben's doing?
So, one of the things when I was reading on your website, you talked about finding the highest and best use for the land that y'all find. What do y'all do to actually figure out, you know, if someone is looking at maybe doing a development, how do you determine what the highest and best use is for land?
Greed. I know it's funny, but there's nothing more that's going to drive your imagination on the highest and best use in, you know, unless you have a little bit of greed in your, you know, in your backbone there. And what I mean by that, I don't mean the proverbial sense of being greedy. I mean, you want to go for as much density as you can that the city will allow you to do, whether it's two tower stories and a podium or whatever it may be. So the way that I do it is we have what we call urban planners up here, which are very similar to land use lawyers down in the U.S. So I have a great relationship with mine. I send them a property. Within 24 hours, they'll tell me what I can get on that within the municipality that I'm looking at, within the zoning of that specific municipality so that I can get that entitled and move it forward. But, you know, we always, like, there's a point where in Canada here, like, we are sandwiched between where I'm at in the Toronto area, we are sandwiched between the Great Lakes and the biggest environmentally protected green belt in the world. So we don't have much room to go. And nobody wants to live north in our country because it's freezing. And I'm not going to beat around a bush. 90% of our population lives within 100 miles of the U.S. border. So we can only go up. So it's, you know, we're starting to learn different situations. So one of the things that we've done is we got unique in the marketplace. We have partnered with we did a strategic partnership with a company out of New York, and we're able, with their systems, we're able to take a 400 square foot studio apartment condo and make it operate as 700 square feet. So that's the highest and best use for us. So now we can get 40% more density in our building by going heavy studios that operate as a bedroom, a living room, and a home office. So we're really kind of geared towards creating some affordability in the marketplace, because everything you're going to see in development is not going to be big anymore in buildings. It's all compact, because that's the way that performers end up working. More density equals more dollars per square foot. Smaller units, they sell for higher per square foot than a three-bedroom condo, because in Canada, in our area, a three-bedroom condo goes for just as much as a single-family home, if not more.
Definitely market-dependent for sure, based on, you know, as you mentioned, density. Ben, as we wrap up here, final question for me would be, like, you talked about some, like, you're doing some high-level development stuff, but for someone, they say a new investor that's interested in starting to do development, this could be a very small project. Maybe it's even ground-up construction on one house or, you know, small multifamily. Pieces of advice for them on how to get into development.
Shadow somebody who's done it before, right? Learn the intricacies of it. Ask questions. you know, everybody loves to talk about themselves and their story and what they've done or how they've done it. Just pick somebody's brain. You know, nobody's going to say no, or go spend a couple hours with people and, you know, really learn the intricacies of syndications, of general partnerships, limited partnerships, look at funds, all those different things. You need to know, the biggest nugget that I would tell people is that if you're going to get into development, make sure that you know what your cost per square foot buildable is in your marketplace, because that will drive everything that you do from a highest and best use standpoint and moving forward with your strategies, all those things. If it's going to cost you too much, then don't do it, right? And don't try to manipulate the numbers, because development's the quickest way to lose your shirt, but it's the quickest way to gain a parka as well.
And it's okay to start small, right?
You can do 100%.
Then that kind of ease your way in, bring in a partner, learn the ropes.
That's right.
Guys, limit. That's
right.
Yeah. So the website is lionheartdevelopment.co. That's lionheartdevelopment.co. Ben, tell people what they're going to see and kind of what your company is doing whenever they go there.
So you're gonna see our current projects going on. You're gonna learn a little bit about myself and our team. And you know, if anybody wants to book a call, you can do it through the website. I love the sound of my own voice, so I have no problem talking about development till I'm blue in the face. You know, we offer up lots of opportunity for people to invest and learn. We're also attaching, which is unique in our marketplace or in our medium, is that we're gonna attach a anybody who invests with us is going to get a educational component to it. So we're going to open the curtain behind the development. So you'll be able to get into meetings or see meetings and see why we made the decisions that we made. And as the project unfolds, you get to learn a little bit more. So you get to kind of see some of that going to the website, or you can follow me at Coach Ben Julius on Instagram and LinkedIn. Ben Julius, I'm always open for a conversation. So.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. The website, again, is lionheartdevelopment.co. If you have any questions you'd like Zach or myself to answer in future episodes, please don't forget, email those to podcast@renttoretirement.com. That's podcast@renttoretirement.com, and we will get those answered. And don't forget to check out, if you're looking to purchase your own single-family rental or small multi, you can head over to renttoretirement.com to see the inventory we have there, schedule a time to talk with us, and just see what all we have going on. That's at renttoretirement.com. Ben, again, thank you for joining us today. To all of our listeners, thanks for spending the time educating yourselves, and we'll talk to you on the next episode.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.